Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is November 11th, 2008. We're discussing the 64th limb of devotion, Sri Mathura Mandali Stiti, the power of living in the holy abode of Mathura. This is from Padma Puran. Anyeshu Punya Tirteshu Muktireva Mahafalam Mukte Pratya Harer Bhaktir Mathura Yantu Labhyate Tevara Gada Kaminam Yav Mukshuncha Mokshada Bhaktich Chor Bhaktida Kashtam Mathuram Nashrayad Buddha Aho Marupuri Danya Vaikuntacha Gariyasi Dina Mekam Nivasena Haro Bhakti Prajayate. Mukti or liberation is the great fruit of living in other sacred places of pilgrimage. But bhakti in Lord Hari, which is aspired after the liberated souls themselves, is attainable in Mathura. When it says bhakti, it means bhava bhakti. Here bhakti refers to bhakti in a stage of bhava bhakti. So that's sthayi bhava. So this verse is saying that by staying in Mathura Mandal or Braj Mandal, Trasikosh, Vrindavan, one can attain devotion to the Lord, but not only devotion but bhava, just from contacting holy name, holy dham of Mathura. Who can be that wise person who will not take shelter in Mathura, which offers dharma, art, and calm to the pleasure-seeking elevationists? So some people come here and live here, and they have the desire for some material things, and they receive those also. But the real special benefit of the holy dham is that if one comes here as a devotee, with the desire to serve the Lord and attain the Lord's eternal service, then just living in Brajadam will actually give that. That is a really long purport here. We can try to examine it. So it's talking about the chit shakti of the Lord. Which is the outcome of the chit potency of the Supreme Godhead? Superior to even the chit potency of the Lord is the glorious potency of Mathura, which is manifest on earth. Still, superior potencies are more, and more sublime powers are found in Vrindavan. This is told in Upadeshamrita also, which covers an area of 32 square miles. Therefore, O beautiful lady, this is some quote, what purpose can there be of the wealth of even 10 million worlds for Radha? All this wealth is found in even a small particle of dust of Vrindavan. So in this shloka, Rupa Goswami himself describes Goloka as a manifestation of the majesties and wealth of Gokul. The scriptures have always given superior importance and greater sweetness to Gokul over Goloka. So Gokul means the manifestation on the earth, the Boma Vrindavan. Because on earth planet there are some special leelas that don't manifest in the spiritual world. Jiva Goswami describes that Krishna is born here and grows up here. But there Krishna is Nitya Navayovanam. And he doesn't kill demons, at least externally kill demons in the spiritual world. There's just some rumors of demons. And in Krishna's palace there's some paintings on the wall of different demons. And then the gopis sometimes, they say, you know, they say, what is this? You know, when they see the paintings. They say, oh yeah, this is one demon I killed when I was on earth. And this and that. So there's only rumors of demons, but there's no actual, Krishna doesn't have any combat or actually fight them there. So this, they say that this Leela here is called Gokul, has much more sweetness in a lot of ways than even the spiritual world. In Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami, he describes that Mathura Mandala is divided into two parts. One is Gokul and one is called Pura. further in his Upadeshamrita, Rupa Goswami says that Mathura is superior to Vaikuntha, that is Goloka, and Vrindavan, because Vrindavan is higher than Mathura because of the Lord's rasa dance. And this is nectar of instruction. Superior to Vaikuntha is Mathura because Krishna appears there. And so, and even when it says superior to Vaikuntha, it also means Goloka. It also means Vrindavan, the spiritual world. So superior to Goloka, the spiritual world, is Mathura, because here in Mathura Mandala on earth, Krishna makes his appearance. He actually, the birth lila, Janma Utsav. And then, but superior to the Mathura and the Janma lila is Vrindavan, because Krishna has his rasa dance there. Because the Gokul lila is only Vatsalya lila. That's really Vatsalya bhava is there in the birth. But in Rasalila, there's Madhura Bhava, and all the Bhavas are flavor. The flavors of all the Bhavas are experienced in the Rasalila and Vrindavan. But then even higher than Vrindavan is Govardhan. Because Govardhan, of course, also there's Rasalila and Parsoligram, Chandra Sarovar. There's the Vasant Ras. The speciality of Govardhan is that Krishna relishes all his different rasas here, with coward boys and with the mothers and everyone. He has different rasas. Sometimes he circumambulates Govardhan Hill with his mother and father, right, in the bullock cart. So that's Vatsalya rasa, and the coward boys are there, and then the peacocks and the birds and all kinds of Shanta and Dasya rasa. And then, of course, there's Madhurya rasa. But then the Madhurya rasa at Govardhan is very special because the rasa dance here is a special. It's much more special than the rasa dance in Vrindavan. Because in Vrindavan, it's many different gopis. But the rasa dance here is only with Radharani and her group. And then higher than, let's say that the eternal sakis are here, not the sadhana siddhas. But then higher than Govardhan is Radhakund. Because in Radhakund, it's only Radharani. It's Radha's Kund. So she's a topmost devotee, and her Kayavyuha expansions, the Ashtasakhis, are the direct representatives or counterparts of Radharani's Bhav. And this Natya Shastras, the study of drama, they describe rasa, different flavors of rasa, and different types of nayaka, nayak, heroines, heroes and heroines. So in this exchange between lovers and Madhurya rasa, there's eight kinds of bhavas, eight kinds of emotional expressions. And they're called nayaka bhav. There's eight different ones. One is called Swadina Bhatrika bhav. And this is where the lover controls her lover. So Radharani controls Krishna by her love. And she orders him, you dress me, you make a garland for my hair, and this type of thing. There's another, so that's one of the eight. And then another eight is Vasajak. Vasajak means this is a bhav where a lover waits in the kunj. Radharani waits to meet Krishna. That kind of feeling she has where she's waiting, the longing, the eagerness. And there's eight altogether. So each one of the gopis, the Ashtasakhis that are expanded from Radharani, they represent one of these eight types of nayaka bhavs. So Radharani and her gopis, they are serving Krishna in a very special way in Radhakund. So Krishna relishes their services in the greatest form. An intimacy at Radhakund. So that's why Radhakund is much more superior even to Govardhan, because it's only Madhurya Ras and all these Nayaka Bhavas that are exchanged. And the sweetness of the pastimes is completely unexcelled anywhere. Even the Acharyas explain that Krishna has Ras Leela. I mean, Krishna has different Julan Leela and Jalkeli, different pastimes here and there in Vrindavan. But when he has Jalkeli and Radhakund, when he has Julan Yatra and Radhakund, it is the most satisfying. and says that even superior to Vrindavan is Govardhan, because the Lord held Govardhan up with his blessed fingers. So this is what makes Govardhan special compared to Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a rasa dance, but Krishna danced on Vrindavan, or on the sands of Jamuna Pulin and Deer Shamir and all these Vamshiva, all these areas. But he didn't touch it with his own hand. His feet were touching, which is also wonderful. But here he lifted Govardhan Hill. So Govardhan Hill became such an intimate associate of Krishna, such an intimate servant, Giriraj. And Krishna held him on his hand for 7 days. So Krishna never stayed 7 days anywhere in one place. Anywhere in Vrindavan, Krishna never stayed 7 days continuously. And Krishna never embraced anyone in Vrindavan for 7 days continuously. Even if he wanted to. He would like to embrace Radharani 7 days, 24 hours a day, but the circumstance and the other rasas and the other relationships did not allow him to do that. Sometimes he would have to be with the gopas and sometimes with his mother and father. But Giriraj is so much special because Krishna was embracing him, or at least holding him, holding his hand or holding his whatever, holding him on his hand. But he never held Radharani's hand for 7 days. The same hand, you have to think about it now. The same hand that he held up Govardhan is the hand that he uses to hold Radharani's hand. Because in his right hand he has his flute, and Radharani's on his left side. He puts his left arm around Radharani, and he holds her hand. So the hand that holds Radharani would love to hold Krishna's hand for 7 days. Any contact with Krishna is wonderful, is lovable, is admirable. Imagine chanting the holy name for 7 days without stopping. No sleep, no eating. Well, how much love you would experience. How much ecstasy and joy you would experience. Non-stop chanting for 7 days. Anam Saptaha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. I'm sure within 2 days you'd be in ecstasy. There's nothing else. No sleeping. You can't become ecstatic by sleeping. You can't become ecstatic by eating, because that's canceled. Mating, defending are left long ago. And there's no chance of defending. Defending means interacting with other people. Ahara nidra maitun bayam. Bayam means fearing or defending. We say bayam, the word bhaya means fear. And why is that word fear translated into defending? Have you ever heard this? We should try to conquer over eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Have you ever heard this phrase? Ahara nidra maitun bayam. Ahara means eating. Nidra means sleeping. Maitun. It means mating or intercourse, sex intercourse, union. These things are keeping us here in this material world, because these are material activities. And then there's bhayam, B-H-A-Y-A, bhayam. It means fearing. It's usually translated as defending. So why don't we say eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing? Because we're also very afraid. Everyone's afraid. And of course, it can be taken that way. That these are material problems. Anyone who's in conditioned life, or anyone who's conditioned, he has to deal with these realities of material duality and existence. And so, all of us are afraid. And every fear that we have is simply a branch from the trunk of the main fear that faces every living entity. And the main fear of every living entity is non-existence. Preservation is the first law of nature. Have you ever heard this phrase? Preservation, preserve my existence. So non-existence is the trunk, the root cause of all fear. All fear, all phobias are basically expansions of the fear of death. Right. So this is all these anomalies come in material consciousness and material identity, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So bhayam means this, and that can be clear. Bhayam, fear. So we all deal with these fears, fear of robbery, fear of failure in the exam in school, fear of rejection, fear of emotional, you know, defeat, or fear that our husband or wife will leave us or our friend will leave us. It's all, ultimately, it's fear of death. But then why is it translated as defending? So the understanding we got on this thinking about this principle and seeing it happening is that they go together. Fear and defending go together. We are, because we're in conditioned consciousness, we're existing in the false ego. The false ego means misidentification, misconception. I am woman, I am man, I am Indian, American, Russian, whatever, smart, stupid, beautiful, ugly, tall, short, fat, thin, rich, poor. These are upadis. These are all manifestations of ahankar, of false ego. And these surround us, all these designations, upadis, they surround us, we are saturated with these designations, and we operate out of these designations, consciously and unconsciously. So we operate out of these designations, and all these various designations lumped together are known as false ego. So the defending principle is, this is a material problem, defending. And defending comes into play when we're afraid, when our false ego gets challenged. We're afraid of our position. Our position is false. Our identity is false. Based on our false identity, then our position, our actions are false. So oftentimes, someone insults us or something, then we defend. We're afraid. Because of fear, bhayam, then we defend. This is the fourth contamination of the conditioned soul. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, or bhayam. So we are afraid to be defeated. We're afraid to have our ego insulted or defeated. So we're always reacting to different circumstances wherein our identity or our ego is being challenged. So we defend ourselves. For example, two people are in the kitchen and one person is cooking. I mean, it happens 20 times a day in everybody's life. This defending principle is not a secret. We're defending practically all the time. What are we are defending? The fear of losing our ego. The fear of losing our ego, which means our false conception, our false identity of who we are. We're always afraid of that, so we have to defend ourselves. If you're afraid of losing your palace to the conquering king, then you'll defend your palace, isn't it? You have a very beautiful palace, and some king, you make all kinds of arrangements to defend yourself because of fear of being conquered by your enemy when he's attacking your palace, right? So our palace is our false ego. And we're afraid of losing it or getting it diminished or defeated, so then we defend. But it happens all the time. And when you start examining yourself and examining the content of your subtle body, then you see how much we are defending all the time. And we refuse to give up our position. The palace, we don't want to, our palace is our prized possession. We worked hard to build this palace. And many thousands of men have worked together to construct this palace. So in our case, many thousands of lifetimes have gone into the construction of this palace of the false ego. The citadel of the false ego. Many thousands of years of hard effort have gone into building this false ego. So if someone challenges it, oh, we send all the troops out there to fight like anything. This thing, that thing. It's like, You know, you just see it. I can't think of so many examples right now, but having some students and having studied my own personality and subtle body for many years, it's so clear when they see other people operating out of their palace. Operating out of their palace instead of operating out of their Atma. Because the Atma is a unit of dedication. The Atma is a unit of surrender. And the Atma is a unit of humility. But the false ego is all the opposite. The false ego is proud. The false ego is unsurrendered. And the false ego is not dedicated to anything but itself. In training some students, I say, don't defend. They say, like, someone has to be somewhere. And they say, so why are you late? Oh, there was so much traffic and this and that. You know, we got late. You know, the train thing was down and this and that. And I said, well, what time you left? So we left 45 minutes ago from Vrindavan, but the train, you know, we had to wait an hour. I said, well, have you ever had that experience before, waiting an hour? And they said, yes. I said, then why don't you calculate that it may take an hour and 45 minutes to get here, then leave Vrindavan an hour and 45 minutes before the class. Then they were quiet. Because their ego was pinched. They somehow, in other words, they knew. And we're always, the whole thing about devotion is we have to examine, because the ultimate thing that's really keeping us in a material world is not the body and senses, but it's the ego. So we can control the body and senses somewhat by mind power, mind over matter. But over mind is intelligence, and more powerful intelligence is ego. So this is the real enemy to be addressed, the false ego. Well, I didn't do it. No, the pot burned the doll. I didn't burn the doll. I can remember somebody cooked and then something burned. They said, Maharaj, this pot is too thin. I said, okay, blame it on the pot. The pot is not conscious. The pot is insentient. It's unconscious. You're conscious. When you start to cook, you should think, oh, I'm using a thin pot. I'm in a new place. This pot is not my sandwiched, steel-bottomed pressure cooker from Delhi. This is some thin, cheap village pot, and I had to put more water in it and be careful and not burn the dal. When you burn the dal, I said, you burn the dal. No, no, I didn't burn the dal, I cooked it, but, you know, I mean, this pot's too thin. Achcha. All right. So, dealing with people and students and ourselves, and I say, excuse me, and like they start to speak like this, I say, stop it, stop. I stop them. I don't defend, just surrender. This is a very common mantra I use with my students. I stop, don't defend, just surrender. Did you burn the doll or not? Who burned the doll? The pot? The pot burned the doll? The doll burned the doll? Or did the gas burn the doll? Or maybe it was the air. It must have been the air. The air inside the pot burned the doll. No. The water. No, better yet. The water inside the pot burned the doll. That makes good sense. All right, Maharaj. And maybe, very rarely, some very surrendered student will say, Maharaj, But I'm perfect. I'm perfect. I never make a mistake. How can I do anything wrong? I burned the doll. Now that, to say that might take like lifetimes of surrender. So this is false ego in action. Eating, mating, sleeping, and defending. Defending means false ego. So when the false ego is annihilated by bhakti bhajan, then there's no more engagement in defending. A little side point. We're talking about the 64th limb of devotion, which is living in Mathura. So if you want to live in Mathura, we have to become free from false ego. And we had a small digression about that. Very interesting point. I think you can relate to this discussion. Theory is one thing, practice is another. So we have some idea of the gyan about the... We discussed about the operation of ego, identity, defending, fearing, and how they're all related in context of daily activities. But it's something to work on, because once the false ego is purified, then we're liberated. Then we're fixed. So this is a very nice point that the commentary is making. The commentator is saying that he's describing the hierarchy of the holy dhams and why Rupa Goswami, he is saying Madhura Mandale Stiti. This is one of the 64 limbs of devotion. Well, that's devotion and the power of living in Mathura Mandala, which he quotes from Panapran. If somebody lives in Mathura Mandala anywhere in the Chaurasi Kosh of this mandal, 168 square mile region, of course it can't be measured, but it's given that number, it's unlimited transcendental region. If one lives anywhere in Mathura Mandala, unlike some tirtha, holy tirtha or holy place, in Mathura Mandala he can attain Bhava Bhakti by the power of the Dham, the Chit Shakti. But then in the commentaries, Jiva Goswami is explaining, the Rupa Goswami is saying higher than Vaikuntha, but actually the word is Goloka. Goloka also includes Goloka Vrindavan. There's Goloka Vaikuntha. Goloka sometimes means Vaikuntha. And Goloka, just saying Goloka can also mean Vrindavan. But when you say Goloka Vrindavan, that means the topmost spiritual planet, which is where Krishna is, Loka Vrindavan. And the outer petal of that lotus, one of the outer petals is Dwarka, and then the little inner petal of that lotus is Mathura. Then the center of that is the Corolla, or whatever they call it, Corolla. That is the Vrindavan. And so this is Goloka Vrindavan planet, with these three divisions of the lotus. But when Rupa Goswami is saying that higher than Goloka is Gokul, as Krishna is born there, he's including Goloka Vrindavan. So Gokul on the Boma Vrindavan, Gokul on the earth is higher than Goloka Vrindavan, because, as Jiva Goswami explains, in Goloka Vrindavan Krishna doesn't appear, he doesn't take birth, he doesn't kill the demons like directly. There are paintings of demons on the palace walls. On the outer walls of the Nanda Baba's palace, there are beautiful paintings instead in the walls of Krishna killing different demons. Sometimes when the gopis come for Krishna's Janmashtami celebration, every year there's a birthday party at Krishna's house. And they come to Nandagaon. There's music and dance and a big party. And so sometimes they're walking around the palace and looking on the veranda. And they look at the paintings and they say, "Oh, Krishna, what's this one?" "Oh, that's Agasura. He was a terrible character." So there's paintings of the demons, and then there's some rumors of those demons, but he doesn't tangle with them directly. But in Gokul, they take shape and form. They become four-dimensional, and he wrestles with them and slaps them and kicks them and finishes them off. So that's one point. Then the birth is another point, and the growing up. It's Bali and Boganda and Kaishar Lila. It's Nitya Lila there. It's Navayovanam. Eternally 15 years, 9 months, 7.5 days old. So this is Krishna. So this Gokul is higher than Goloka, but then higher than Gokul, where Krishna took birth in his Janam, is Vrindavan. Why? It's because of the Ras Lila, Rasastali, the epitome of Ras. Is experienced there, which has sprinkles and flavors of all the other rasas. There's friendship and there's nourishment and everything is there. But of course, mostly the Madhurya ras. And then higher than Vrindavan is Govardhan. And the point that they're making here, which is very interesting, why is Vrindavan, the rasastali, Why is Govardhan higher than the Rasastali? It's because Krishna held it with his blessed fingers. And we were discussing that this hand that held Govardhan hill for 7 days. So such an intimate relationship, that aspect, because this is, we're talking about dhams now. We're talking about dhams, not people. We're talking about Gokul Dham, Mathura Dham, Vrindavan Dham. Now we're talking about Govardhan Dham. So this Dham, this Sandini Shakti, manifestation of Sandini Shakti, and the interplay of Ladini and Chit, when Krishna enacts his Leela there. So when he comes to Govardhan, here he picks up the Dham. And the Rasastali Mathura, he comes and goes, and the pastime is a few nights or whatever. But here, with his blessed fingers, Krishna held Govardhan for 7 days. So that he held the Dham in his hand, Govardhan Dham, Govardhan Nath, for 7 days and nights without moving anywhere else. He comes to Rasastali, stays a few hours and goes. He comes, takes birth in Gokula, then moves. But 7 days. And then we also made the comment, for those who came late, is that this hand that Krishna held up Govardhan with is the same hand he holds Radharani with. His left hand. He holds Radharani's left hand. But he never held Radharani's left hand for 7 days without stopping. But he held Govardhan. And Govardhan is, of course, his devotee, Giriraj. So he held hands with his devotee, Giriraj, for 7 days and nights. So that's why Radharani is saying in the Gopi Gita, she's saying, Haridas Varya. She said, you are the greatest Haridas. In one sense, you're greater than me. Of course, Radharani, obviously, is the greatest devotee of the Lord. But she herself, who is the greatest of all possible Haridases. But in terms of the three Haridases of Bhagavatam, Haridas Yudhisthira and Haridas Uddhav, then these are also mentioned in the Sanskrit verses of Bhagavatam as Haridas. Yudhisthira Haridas, Uddhav Haridas, and there's Giriraj Haridas. Of those three, then Giriraj is the greatest. But if we look at the term as Haridas, or let's say Haridasi, Radharani is obviously the topmost Haridasi, Haridas, any of the servitors of the Lord is Radharani. And this Haridas, or Haridasi, Radharani, she's speaking in Gopi Gita, that Giriraj, he's the greatest. So we can see this as one reason or reasoning that Radharani may have had. Listen, okay, I'm the Aradhanam, I'm the greatest worshipper, I'm the greatest lover, and my Madanakya Mahabhav, Divyonmad Mahabhav is only coming from my heart, and Krishna relishes this Mahabhav. But still, look at this Giriraj. He held hands with Krishna for 7 days, 7 nights. He associated non-stop. So what if I'm also Krishna's devotee, but I can't be with Krishna non-stop for 7 days, except there, like Govardhan. But he wasn't holding my hand, he was holding Giriraj's hand. He was looking at me, and of course there are also some other descriptions about this Govardhan Leela that Krishna, he had his Prakash Vigraha, was holding the hill. Then in Swayam Rup form, he entered some places there underneath Govardhan to be with Radharani for 7 days. There's also discussions like this. As you know, when Krishna engages in the Rasa-lila, in the Rasa-mandala, this is nothing very esoteric, this is quite there in the Bhagavatam, he expands himself to go to dance with all the different gopis that are there, Sadhana-siddhi gopis, Munichari gopis. But this is called Swayam Prakash Vigraha, right? This is basic Chaitanya Charitamrita Bhagavatam, Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Swayam Prakash. So that Swayam Prakash, it looks like Krishna and the paintings, but it's not Swayam Krishna. It's Swayam Prakash. It's a manifestation of Swayam Krishna. So Lalita, Vishaka, all the different gopis are all dancing. Krishna Gopi, Krishna Gopi, Krishna Gopi, Krishna Gopi. But that's Swayam Prakash, Rupa. But the Swayam Rupa of Krishna is with Radharani in the center of the Rasa dance. This form never leaves Radharani. when Krishna's sleeping with Radharani and Nikunj, and she says, "Oh, I'm tired, leave me alone, go see all the other gopis." So that's his Swayam Prakash. He expands like this. So it's conceivable that when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, Swayam Prakash Krishna was lifting Govardhan Hill, because some acharyas mentioned this. Then Swayam Krishna very nicely disappeared with Radharani for 7 days. And Yogamaya arranged a very wonderful extended meeting with an extended sangha, Radharani sangha, because the ultimate meaning of the word sangha is divine union. Sa-anga. Anga means body. Sa means with. Body with body. So sadhu sangha means that you're with the sadhu, you're with his body, but you're with the body of his bhav also. And you're with the form of his body, you're with the form of his bhav, you're with the form of his realizations. That's called sadhu sangha. So this is very interesting. So Govardhan is like this. He's higher, he's superior to Vrindavan. But most supreme to this Govardhan Hill is Radhakund. Because here, the flood of nectar of prema ras of the Lord of Gokul, one can find a flood of rasa here. There's so much rasa flowing here in Radhakund and Shyamakund. So much rasa. Although Krishna, in different places in Vrindavan, Krishna has Julan Leela. He has Banbihar. He has Bojan Leela. He has Ratikeli. He has Jalkeli. So many leelas he has in Barsana, Nandagram, and Govardhan, and Vrindavan. Same to same leelas. But when these leelas are performed at Radhakund, the rasa that's generated here is like a flood. There's a flood of rasa. Each leela produces an extremely extraordinary taste. Okay, there's Julan Leela in Barsana. There's Julan Leela here and there. But when Krishna comes to Radhakund, when he has Julan Leela here, it's a special flavor. It gives a special thrill, happiness, and sweetness. And there's so much ras from all these different leelas, the extreme experience of ras, prema ras, that Radha and Krishna experience, and the same leelas, but when performed at Radhakund, there's so much ras generated from each one of those leelas that it collects together to form two lakes. One lake is known as Shyamakund, the other lake is known as Radhakund, which is a repository and the reservoir, the collected reservoir of all this rasa. All the prema rasa that's generated in Julan Leela is deposited there. All the prema rasa that's generated in Jalkeli and Ratikeli, it's all collected there. So when one bathes in Radhakund and Shyamakund, and he's bathing in all this prema rasa from all these different leelas that are going on here. There's also Ras Leela here on the banks of Radhakund. And there's Ras Leela Chandrasarovar, and there's Ras Leela and Punchari Chandrasarovar. And there's also Ras Leela and Rasastali Vrindavan, Govindastali and Jamuna Palina. But the rasa here, it's collected here in these two kunds. That's why Acharya is saying that rasa, you take the syllables rasa and then you put it backwards, it becomes sa ra. Ra and sa become sa and ra. And sa ra means lake. So the rasa, there's so much rasa here that it creates an entire lake. A sarovara, a lake. But have we seen huge lakes in Bamshivat? Have we seen huge lakes formed at Govardhan, at Punchari, the Rasastali? We don't see. We see some trees grow there. Tamal trees grow, Kadamba trees grow. They signify the Ras. So that's why Radhakund is superior even to Govardhan. Raghunath Das Goswami, he says in his Brajavilas Tav, in Dwarka, where the Lord enjoys the company of Rukmini, Satyabhama, and other queens, and the queens of Dwarka, of course, they make hundreds of Lakshmis look insignificant. Where his brother Balaram and his sons and grandsons offer Krishna constant company, this Dwarka is much more superior to Vaikuntha. But even superior to Dwarka is Mathura, where Krishna appeared and made his descent. But in the center of Mathura Mandala shines the realm of prema. That's a very interesting phrase. The realm of prema, the abode of prema, Braj, in all its supreme fascination and charming glories. Hence, Vrindavan is far superior to Dwarka. May I constantly serve such Mathura. So Raghunath Das Goswami is showing that Dwarka is superior to Vaikuntha, but superior to Dwarka is Mathura Braj. Those who have attained prema bhakti by following the injunctions of Vaidhi sadhana, bhakti, by hearing and chanting, meditating, such liberated souls attain Goloka. It has therefore been said in Loka Bhagavatamrita that Sri Krishna lives in all four places, Braj, Mathura, Dwarka, and Goloka. This is well known in the Puranas. The different gradations of the transcendental realm have been shown here from the highest to the lowest. Mathura is inferior to Braj, Dwarka is inferior to Mathura, and Goloka is inferior to Dwarka. Again, in Loka Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami comes to the conclusion where it is stated that when Krishna returned to Braj from Dwarka, Nanda and the other gopas in Yashoda, along with their sons and all relatives, got into celestial cars in their divine forms by the grace of Krishna and attained Vaikuntha Loka, that is Goloka. Sri Krishna, Sri Rupa, in his two comments, comes to the conclusion that Drona and others who had entered the bodies of Nanda and Yashoda during their descent in the material world alone entered Goloka. But those who were dearer to than the dearest, Chitrak, Patrak, Raktak, the eternal personal servants of Sri Krishna Braj, Sridham, Sudham, Subal, Madhumangal, Ujvala, his eternal intimate friends, Nanda, Upananda, Sunanda, Yashoda Rohini, his dearest parents, and Radhika and the other damsels of Braj, who are his most beloved consorts, stayed with Krishna forever to reside in Braj. Well, this is describing how, in the Bhagavatam, how Drona and Dara were like celestial beings that did some penance, and then they kind of merged or kind of got to experience Krishna's motherhood and fatherhood by entering the body of entering Yashoda and Nanda, and then they returned afterwards. This is kind of an interesting concept. At the end of his commentary, Srimad Kundadas Goswami apologizes to the pure devotees for his disclosing the esoteric meaning of Braj Lila as conceived by the Gaudiyas. Because in Loka Bhagavatamrita explains how there's two aspects of Braj Vrindavan. Because Vishnu Chakravarti brings up the same question, Raghavart Manachandrika. What happens to someone who worships Radha and Krishna, but they perform Vaidhi sadhana, and they come to the level of prema? Vaidhi, that bhava bhakti by Vaidhi sadhana, not by Raghunuga, and then prema. But their whole mood towards Radha and Krishna is rules and regulations, scriptures, and very official. How can they go to the Vrindavan of the Gopi, the Braja Gopis, and this Madhurya Vrindavan? So he says there's an Aishwarya Vrindavan. This is called Goloka Vrindavan. So this gets a little confusing. But this is, he explains there's two Vrindavans in the spiritual world. This is also in Gopal Champu. I said this before sometimes. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita mentions this idea also. So that you, by Vaidhi sadhana, you can attain prema and you'll attain Radha and Krishna, but in kind of a Aishwarya mode. It's not the same sweetness. And all the details are not so much given. But we, in other words, it's not encouraged to go that way. That one should perform Vaidhi with the desire to attain Brajabhav, not just Krishna, Radha and Krishna. You want the Bhava, the Brajvasis. Because in Vaidhi sadhana, you'll zero in on Radha and Krishna and puja and worship and Radha and Krishna and Radha and Krishna. But you don't become Braja Loka Anusarata. You don't follow the particular resin of Vrindavan. When you come under the gopis directly and their expansions and their sadhaka forms like Rupa Goswami, then you begin to follow the path of Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. And Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti takes you to where they are. So that's the intimate Madhurya Vrindavan. It's a little bit esoteric, but generally, our six Goswamis and our Guru Varg, they're teaching us to qualify and come to the platform of Raghunuga Sadhana. So this is the last limb of devotion, Matura Mandala Stitte.